morning, Council. Today is Tuesday, October 15th, 2024. We have four cases on our calendar. This is the third one set for oral argument. This is A24-0409, County of Countywood and Debbie Denise Cook versus Joseph Zachary Zellner. And if I mispronounced the last name, please, my apologies. We have 15 minutes for arguments by appellant's counsel, and then we will have 15 minutes of argument by response counsel, followed by 5 minutes for rebuttal by appellant, if you so choose. This is being live streamed. It is also being recorded, and no other recordings are permitted. However, you will be able to access audio of this recording within the next few days if you want to go back and listen to the arguments. If we do run into any technical difficulties at all, we'll make sure that each party has appropriate amount of time. There is a timer in one of the boxes. It is set for 15 minutes. Please be mindful of your time to stay within the time limits. And with that, appellant's counsel, you may begin. Please state your name for the record and the party you are representing.
Good morning. May it please the panel, my esteemed colleague, Mr. White. My name is Jacob Burkholz, and I represent the appellant, Ms. Lubin Cook, and she has since changed her name, but she's Debbie Cook in this matter. And so I'd like to start out with an overview. I mean, I don't think the facts are really in dispute, and I'm well aware that modifications to parenting time plans or denials of parenting time plans fall within a wide swath of the discretion of the district court. And so why do I think this case merits a reversal, and why am I asking this case to reverse? And I believe it's an abuse of discretion to deny the modification for an increase of parenting time, but I've presented what I believe to be a more interesting issue for this court, which is the actual findings by the district court support appellant's motion, however they were categorized in a fashion or a conclusory fashion in an effort to reach a conclusion, which is to deny the request. And so that's my point two of my motion, which is that the factors aren't neutral. And so therefore, what's the standard of review? Is the standard—
Counsel, can I just, before you go into that, as a point of clarification, I appreciate the way that you frame this. Are you claiming that any of the findings by the district court are unsupported by the record?
Yes.
Which one? It was unclear to me from your briefing which ones of the findings you're claiming are not supported by any evidence in the record.
Certainly. Well, here's the dilemma. Are they really comments or commentary, or is it really a finding? And so, for example, the court went on to discuss page 13 of my brief, factor four, for example. The district court says the record before the court does not present a clear picture.
Yes.
So is that a finding? I guess it just says more as an absence of the evidence.
I appreciate that. I appreciate your, you take exception to the manner in which the district court phrased certain of its portions of its order. I completely appreciate that. What I'm interested in is, by number in the district court's order, is there anything in here that you believe is just the facts in the record do not support the facts that are set forth in the order?
Generally, no.
Okay. Go ahead then. I mean, I just wanted that clarification, and I understand your argument. So go ahead, counsel.
Yeah. So, and thank you for that. I think the court did a good job, and I really think that the court pointed out the real issue that I think, and the arguments of both counsel, and that was, I think, trial court counsel, Mr. Kircher, and I, is that Kevin Lubin has been my client for 7 years before this too, which is the argument that Ms. Lubin Cook's significant other is a bad factor or a component in this case, that his prior history of domestic violence is negative for the children, and that he was a prior addict as well. The district court's findings show that that really wasn't a factor, and that in fact, the sobriety and the issues with Ms. Cook or Lubin Cook, that was not anything negative against the children. So You're right. I
Well,
mean,
and counsel, I would note that on that factor, the district court actually found that favorable to mother, the fact that she has been sober for nearly 5 years now. So I think that the district court did a nice job of actually crediting mother for that.
that's right. And so I had a why I encouraged the appeal with my client, and this is kind of twofold. Number one, what happens if she doesn't appeal? I mean, if she doesn't appeal, we wait 5 years to bring this motion, approximately 5 years. And she says, I'm going to do everything in my power to become the person that in 2019, and I know she can blame her trial counsel why the stipulation was entered into. That's water under the bridge. She had her parenting time reduced when it was previously above 50%, based on what appeared to be some involvement with drugs and alcohol and methamphetamine and alcohol. That is not a factor for the district court today. And therefore, we came to the district court showing that the children are doing well. So when you come before this court and say, well, what's the problem? Why are we asking for a reversal? It almost as if this conundrum exists, like the paradox of a good parent. And that is the better your kids are, the more stable they are, the better your household is. It appears that the district court says that's makes you less likely to get an increase in parenting time. I think that's an abuse of discretion. It says that the children essentially are doing well, and that the better that they're doing between the two parents, and that everything's going well, that I'm going to deny it because it's going well. And so could that be categorized as a error in law? Or, I mean, it's a challenge because the district court does go through the best interest factors and does attempt to make findings. But I don't think that the conclusion is supported by those findings and, again, supports an opposite result. I tried to make a summary. I've done this maybe a couple times now where age 18 in my brief, where I highlight this idea where what is mother's position on each of the factors and why, what is mother's position on appeal as it relates to how the district court concluded versus didn't conclude. And so, where this idea that where the court's not persuaded, factor one, or does not support is the opposite conclusion. So, for each of these factors, or again, where the court makes a neutral finding that favors mother. And I think the court did that on purpose to essentially get a results-oriented decision here, meaning the court didn't want to make a change. And therefore, by calling it neutral and by continuing to say that there's neutrality, or and if again you look at all the points and the factors, the court's saying in factor one and factor four, it says it doesn't support or it isn't persuaded. It doesn't say the factors are really against mother or that it's against the best interest. But the neutrality, again, I would submit is a significant change. The law says that every district court judge has to measure this order against the previous order. So, what are we measuring neutrality by? If we're actually measuring neutrality, we'd go by the last court order, not what existed in the prior stipulation or what exists now. So, what does that mean? The factor actually favors mother because all of those things that didn't exist at the time of the previous stipulation are better now. So if things have improved, then they must support mother's request. Because again, keep in mind, we actually have a benchmark, which is that mother's parenting time was greater than 50%. So we know there can't be any real argument that mother was inappropriate as a parent, but for the changes that led to the last court order. And so if we're focused, go ahead, Your Honor, if you have a question.
Yeah, I had a comment. One is that I think we still need to keep I appreciate your argument, but ultimately, still, mother has a burden here, and we do give broad discretion to the district court's determination. And even if we would have come up with a different determination, as long as the district court's determination is supported by the record, we have to defer to that. And so, I mean, I think the district court was had a good challenge here in a way, because this case, I think, is a little unusual because we actually have two parents who by all accounts from the district court, based on the district court's finding, are doing very well in terms of parenting. The children are thriving. The parents co-parent very well together. And so, I mean, the actions by both parents, I think, is commendable. I really commend the parents for all the work that they're doing to raise very, healthy and thriving children. So this is a little bit of an unusual situation, but I think the challenge is, does the record support the district court's findings? And if they do, then we have to give deference, even if we would have decided differently. So I guess my question is, are there any findings that are not supported, even putting aside whether it's labeled as neutral or slightly in favor? Is there anything that's not supported by the record by the district court?
It might be a more interesting question of law that I also struggle with. So this would be page 9 of the district court order, paragraph J. I found this to be a troubling analysis, where the sentence says, the court finds the current schedule achieves a good balance, and then goes on to say, maximizing parenting time does not require parents to share equal time. And I would submit that's an error of law. I mean, if what does it mean to maximize parenting time? What the district court did is made a directed verdict against mother by an interpretation of law. If the current schedule is appropriate, I'm not going to apply the law.
An error of law in terms of what statute or case law does that finding contravene?
The statute. So 518, the plain language of the statute says, right, we're supposed to be maximizing parenting time. So if the district court order is supposed to say, well, how does the proposal maximize parenting time? The district court order says, maybe another way to put it is, I'm not going to apply the statute because I think it's fine. And that's
but maximizing parenting time does not necessarily equate to an equal division of parenting time. I mean, doesn't it also, I mean, doesn't the statute and our case law provide the district court with the ability to assess the circumstances of each particular family unit to determine how to best maximize parenting time given the parents' circumstances and the child's needs and other factors?
I mean, of course, the court has to come up with an appropriate schedule that balances all the best interest factors together and not isolate one against the other, if that's the general concern. True. But the concerning statement simply says it doesn't require it. Well, the way I read that is, well, I don't have to consider the statutory language, and therefore there's no findings upon which the court says, well, how does mother's request not maximize it for both parents? And I think the answer is she knows that it does and doesn't want to discuss it in the order, and then goes on to say the current schedule accomplishes generous parenting time. And I certainly don't think that a statement that I'm not going to consider your request because you already have enough, well, that would essentially prohibit mother ever from coming back, because the schedule as it is now under any scenario is generous enough. What that says is, I'm not going to look at the current circumstances. I'm not going to consider your current request. And I'm not going to consider the current request against how it might negatively impact the other parent's request for parenting time. So essentially, maybe the argument then legally is, the court has to say, well, there aren't sufficient findings. If there aren't sufficient findings for appropriate appellate review, then we have to reverse and remand. And so is it a question of law, or is it a question of the finding, the conclusion is not supported by adequate findings? So a summary dismissal of factor J without an explanation. Again, the court just makes two conclusory statements. The current schedule is a good balance, and the current schedule is a generous time. There is not a single factor of consideration of any of the requests or balances against the children's schedule. Otherwise, again, how would mother ever come back? The court can simply say, didn't you see my last order? It doesn't matter what you do or how you do it or what the children's school schedules are or what your schedule or not, or where we go from here. And the better you are. And again, we go back into, I'll move on to the next point, where paragraph H, page 8, where I referenced before, the record before the court does not present a clear picture. Well, the court's simply speculating. That's not a finding. And the court speculates to the detriment of mother and says the court is unaware. So it's not a finding to be unaware. And I don't think it's appropriate to make a negative inference.
Well, but I think I read the, I understand your argument there, but I read the court's order saying, I don't have enough information. I don't know what mother's home looks like. Is there, for example, are there bedrooms for the girls to sleep in? So it, I don't see that as a negative so much as I'm just lacking the information to make a finding there.
Okay. The interesting question then comes from all practitioners. Do I have to put every single square footage and description of the house or risk losing my motion on appeal for what appears to be an obvious statement? Here's my house, we're living together, and everyone has everything they need. Well, if the district court's going to take all of those statements submitted by mother and infer the worst without an affirmative statement, because mother's statements in her affidavit would contradict the suggestion that I don't have enough, even if.
But mother does have the burden to come forward to be able to say, to present sufficient information for the district court to say, yes, that it looks like the home is adequate to be able to provide sufficient living space for the children there.
I would agree, but there's no suggestion that there isn't. And there's no arguments that there isn't. So I do see I'm out of time.
And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
We will turn now to counsel for respondent. Mr. White, you will have 15 minutes, and it looks like the clock is set. So please state your name for the record, the party you are representing, and you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Kenneth White. I'm an attorney in Mankato, and I represent Father Joseph Zollner in this matter. The children are thriving. That is undisputed. In fact, under questioning from this court, Mr. Burkholz acknowledged that there is not a single factual finding in the court's order with which he disagrees. Yet mother, and it's important to recognize, as the questioning of this court brought out, that mother carries the burden of proving that there should be a modification of parenting time in this case. Whether you apply what I think is the correct standard under 518.175 versus the 12 factor test that the district court applied here. The district court, I think, gave us the answer to the questions that this court had and to Mr. Burkholz's argument at page 15 of its order, where the judge recognized that the focus here is not on the perceived fairness to the parents, but on the best interests of the children. And that's what the district court did. Mr. Burkholz takes isolated sentences and phrases out of the district court's order, and from that generates this conspiracy theory or lack of judicial temperament theory that the court didn't pay attention, had a predetermined answer, came into a hearing already knowing what the court wanted to do and simply accomplishing that in writing. And there's nothing in this record to suggest that is true. And I think this court needs to take a very careful look at that kind of an argument, because anytime anybody loses, we can make the argument that it was predetermined.
Mr. White, I have a question now. This goes back to Mr. Burkholz's argument on the best interest factor found in the district court order on J, which is number 10, factor number 10 of maximizing parenting time. And looking at the district court's order, its finding of fact number 7 indicates that mother and father live in the same town, only a mile apart, and any change in the parenting schedule would not cause a change in the girls' community or school. And then the district court makes a finding and says, quote, an expansion of mother's parenting time would allow the children to have more one-on-one time with mother and the opportunity to confide and share information with mother without the other children being present. Why doesn't this finding of fact number 7 favor equal parenting time and support factor 10 being in favor of mother?
Well, Your Honor, I think that factual finding has to be taken into context with all of the other factual findings that the district court makes. For example, in their brief, the appellants object to the court considering the educational status of the children. Yet the district court did that, and I think that we would all agree that when you're dealing with children, their education is an important factor to be considered. And so at some point that needed to come into play, and the district court credited father's testimony in his affidavit that when the girls returned from a mother's house, they had not completed their homework. And so it needed to be done at father's house, which kept the girls up late and had all of the associated impacts. When the district court credited that testimony, what does that tell the district court, especially in relation to the other factual findings to which counsel objects related to the nature of the household that the children, would be more greatly exposed? And the answer is that the girls would be in a situation for a longer period of time where they are not having the kind of opportunity that they need for whatever reason. And the district court simply notes that the children, I don't know anything about this household. Now, Mr. Burkhold says, does that mean I have to put in the square footage? No, but it's a pretty simple question. How many kids are in each bedroom? How many bedrooms are in the house? What's the setup for homework? What's it look like? Is there an opportunity for the children to be separate, to do their homework, or are they surrounded by other kids playing? All of those questions are things that would very easily and naturally come into an evidentiary hearing related to increasing the amount of time the children are spending at one household while living for a greater extent with a parent. And so the judge is balancing, which is the district court is designed to do and required to do, this notion of more one-on-one time with mother versus the overall impact on the children of being with mother for greater periods of time. And so, Your Honor, I think the ultimate answer to your question, and it's a rather long-winded way to get there, but I think it's an important way to get there, is that the district court is doing its job. The job of the district court is to take all of this evidence, make factual findings as a result of it, and then based on those factual findings, balance what's in the best interest of the children. This is not a one-off kind of analysis that you might make, in a negligence case, who ran the stoplight? This is a balancing test where the court is required to make a determination under the of what is in the best interests of the children. And it's not what's in the best interests of the parents. It's what's in the best interests of the children. It's not whatever perceived unfairness may exist. Counsel makes a lengthy argument about what is mother supposed to do. The better the household or the better relationship she has, the better household that she has, the less likely she is to recover in the end. I don't think that's true, Your Honor. The more the parents cooperate, the better it is for their children. The better.
And Mr. White, that actually leads to another question I have. And I do agree that by all accounts, the parents are doing an outstanding job of raising these children. But you note in your brief, I think appropriately, that mother has a burden of persuasion to show modification is necessary. But you also cite the Niese-Peterson case of that mother has to show that there has been a significant change of circumstances from the time when the amended custody order was issued. And the original custody order was issued, amended, I should say, on December 5th of 2019. And at that time, it gave father more time with children than mother, which was the reverse of what had been before. since that time, since that December 5th order on January 11th, 29, or shortly before that, mother did obtain sobriety on January 11th of 2019. But more importantly, hasn't there been a significant change of circumstances from the time of that amended order in the sense that mother has obtained sobriety, mother has a stable home, she has stable housing for the children, she's taking the children to their activities, she's working with them and supporting them in a number of, in just about every single way possible. Why isn't that a significant change of circumstances that would require modification of the current custody order?
Your Honor, I don't think that the case law says that if there is a significant change of circumstances, the district court must change. The case law says the district court may change. And so again, we end up in this distinction. And in fact, in this case, I don't know that the significant change of circumstances even has any significant, any material application, given the change in the statute to say it's not, there is not a change of circumstances necessary if you're in that roughly 45 to 55% change modification. So I don't think we're in a I'm sorry, Your Honor, I'm fighting a cold and losing today. So I don't think that we're in a circumstance where the change in circumstances is significant. And I think it's important, as this court, this panel recognized, that the district court, in fact, credited mother with her sobriety. But at the same time, the district court expressed some concerns about mother's husband and his past activities. And the fact that at least at the time of the hearing, he was still on probation for domestic abuse. And that is something that plays a role. All of the relationships of parents become a factor in any kind of analysis. I mean, the mother argued that my client's wife having the children at a restaurant where she worked was inappropriate. It exposed them to the bar scene, and the district court expressly rejected that. So you can't have it both ways, Your Honor. Either you get to talk about other relationships and other people involved in the children's lives, or you don't. And I think the answer is you obviously need to, because the children are heavily exposed to those people. And in fact, the district court found that if mother kept her job, she would have to rely on her husband to transport the children to school every morning, or at least the majority of mornings, if she had the children, because she had that modified work schedule for the one day when she had the children overnight early in the morning. So the record overall is one where the district court's findings are supported by that record, and this court's role is not to change the district court order if you disagree with it. It is to determine if the district court order is within the broad discretion of the district court. The Supreme Court laid it all out for us in Kenny about the roles and the broad discretion that exist in the district court in various kinds of settings. And again, we're dealing in a situation where the children are thriving, where the parenting time works, where there has been no major issue between these parents, where they communicate well, where they co-parent well. There's no allegation by anyone that one of the parents is making adverse or nasty comments to the other. Instead, everything seems to indicate that this is a timing and relationship that is working very well, and that under that relationship, the children are thriving. So the district court takes that into consideration as a starting point. The children are thriving. This is not a case where someone is coming to me and saying my children are suffering because of the relationship or the time that they're spending with one parent versus the other. The other thing that I think is important for this court to note, and the district court hints at it in the perceived fairness argument, is that what mother is really doing is trying to shift the burden of proof and to change the legal standard. What she's really trying to do here is to say, I presented evidence that I'm a good mother, therefore I get changes, I get a modification. That's not the legal standard. And that's what mother is trying to do. And so she takes every factual finding, with which she does not disagree, and says, yeah, but there's evidence, there's different evidence in the record that would lead to a different factual finding. That may be true in some circumstances, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter because the district court's role is to make factual findings. And then mother says, and again, repeated it here before this court, I'm a good mother. I do really well. Everything is going along well. And the if you do an analysis of the evidence here, I established I'm a good mother. Therefore, I am entitled to a modification. And that's simply not the law. And this court should reject any effort to turn the law in that direction. Well, unless the panel has additional questions, I don't have anything further that I would like to discuss. I would simply ask this court to affirm the district court decision reject the arguments made by the appellant. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We will turn back to counsel for appellant. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. And I'm glad, Your Honor, you pointed out one of the findings that would be finding 7, where the court expressly makes on page 3 that the expansion would be beneficial for the minor children to have more one-on-one time with mother. So puts that in finding 7, but then doesn't put it in the analysis section of the best interest factors. And doesn't seem to provide any weight to that or significance of it when considering why maximizing parenting time would have a direct benefit for the minor children. I think it goes without saying that mother did a lot more than just provide big glossary statements back and forth. And I think what the real struggle here was the district court, for whatever reason, didn't want to expand the schedule and was trying to find reasons why not to. And here's a portion of the order that I would submit is a struggle for appellate review. And that is best interest factors 14A, page 5 into page 6 under 14A. And what that does is it kind of reiterates sections of the affidavits that it selectively recounts. Is that a recitation of the evidence or is that actually a finding? And I credit Judge, I think it was Judge Shellhas, the Court of Appeals issued a ruling, made it very clear, recitation of evidence is not a finding. And so when the district court goes back and says the evidence presented suggests, okay, that may be the finding, that the household provides a more conducive atmosphere to get homework done. What's interesting is the district court suggests that point and then references some affidavits, but then provides no counterpoint, doesn't look at anything mother says, and then goes on to say, that at Tuesday nights, well, maybe that the homework isn't getting done. Well, we know that mother doesn't have extensive midweek parenting time. And if the court actually looks very deeply in the record, you'll see that the children have actually been doing worse with father in their homework when he has 4/5 of the midweek parenting time. Although father makes no allegation in his affidavit or any supporting affidavit that mother is attributable. So here's the end runaround in the dilemma. If the parents aren't complaining, how does the district court get to complain? Meaning father isn't making the complaints that the district court makes in its findings. So for example, the district court on that same finding says that, it says at the end of that paragraph 14A, where it goes back and makes an inference, and Lubin's affidavit describes the children's routine, and then it says, but it appears that the full house at Cook's is a distraction for quieter tasks such as homework. There's nothing in the record to support that statement. So I know the reference is, am I disputing or am I not disputing the district court's finding? And is that really a finding? Is it a finding that it says it appears? Well, what it should say is no one is suggesting that the Miss Cook's home is inappropriate for homework, or that they're
why is it an unfair inference that if the girls have to go back to their father's house and the homework's, you know, from mom's and the homework's not done, that there's a distraction that is preventing them from doing their homework?
So what does the record actually say about it? About what the homework says in Mr. Zollner's affidavit. And I think it's page 6 of his affidavit, paragraph 17. And says, Miss Cook does not ensure that the homework gets done. But that's the potential inference. They have spelling words and goes on, makes that they're tired and they catch up on homework, that they don't get done. Apologize for that. The question then is that even in the record where it says, well, I don't think they're getting it done, but the court doesn't say the homework isn't getting done or they're not doing well in school. It says it's a distraction. Again, nothing in the record that says the children actually aren't doing their homework or that there's something not going well. I understand that's always a challenge when the courts are trying to make decisions on affidavits, when one party makes a glossary statement, provides no evidence to support it, and the district court says, well, I'm not persuaded. Well, if you look back at Mother's affidavit, and she makes specific statements, including in her responsive affidavit, that says, that's false and I'm doing everything. So is it error for the district court to wholly disregard all of the contrary evidence in the record that Mother is actually doing the homework and is doing the homework with the kids on her time? So if encourages parties to lie, potentially, not get to the truth, and then make an inference that says, well, I don't know if you convinced me enough. So I see I'm out of time.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for your briefing and your oral arguments. I think both were very, very helpful. And we certainly appreciate your representation. I'm sure your clients appreciate your representation of them as well. So thank you both. We will be issuing an order within the statutory timeframe of 90 days. That is our last matter for our oral calendar. And so the court is now in recess. Thank you both.
Thank you.